My name is Halcyon, and this is Hug Nation. What a treat it is to spend this moment with you. Today the topic is humble, brag, inspire. I was at an event this weekend, and it was about connection, and it was about how to go deep with people and meet new people and maximize the interactions we have. And I realized that lately that I've been maybe craving more human connection, more friends. And so when this opportunity in this workshop came up, I'm like, I have to go. And at one point in the workshop, one of the exercises was we would like walk around the room and be open and smile and try to just practice being open to people. And then we would stop and they would give some directive to go interact with somebody. And one of the directives was, go up to somebody that you normally wouldn't go up to, or someone that you're curious about, and strike up a conversation, ask them what you're curious about. And a woman walked up to me, and she said, you know, I'm really curious about some things you said tonight. You know, you shared a lot of things about being anxious and being shy, and I see you as this always smiling, always out there person that's kind of demanding attention. And honestly, I kind of felt like I almost like wanted to hold it back from you because you kind of seem to demand it so much. And I'm so curious, like, what's the story behind this shyness and this this presence? And it was interesting because it was interesting to hear how someone perceives me. And I totally get that. You know, I have that instinct too. If someone is you know, soup, like one of the reasons I have trouble going to concerts is because when everybody's giving attention to the person on stage, it's kind of like, I kind of want, where's my attention? And that was kind of what she said. She's like, well, I kind of like, well, if everyone is giving you attention, what about me? How come my needs aren't getting met? Just because he's the one with the pink hair, everyone gets, you know, and so that's what I mean. Oh, just because they're an incredible musician, everyone has to pay attention to them upstage, playing songs everybody loves and making everybody's lives better. So, unfortunately, the exercise was very short, so I didn't have a chance to really, one, process and think about and give her a good answer. But I did think about it much later during the night, and it's amazing how interconnected it is with so much that's going on in my life. Because on Saturday night, the night before this, we had an event, a fundraiser for First Saturdays, and I read a letter at the beginning of the talk, which is a letter I found just this week that I wrote 15 years ago when I was doing Cocky Bastard and I had long hair and I'll just read a portion of the letter. It seems as though I am at a crossroads. Well, not so much a crossroads, because I don't think there is really a choice. It's just a matter of accepting the flow of the universe into a new area. Crossroads implies I am steering and could choose a path. I am concentrating on not steering, but instead letting the universe flow through me, be a leaf in the stream. This new crossroads is revealing to me that I may have a larger purpose than I thought. The universe may need me to be a leader, to act as a focal point for spreading good energy and love. I know that I do not create those things, but perhaps my gifts will be useful tools for the universe to spread its light. Sometimes it seems so obvious, I simply know it. Sometimes it seems so silly and arrogant that I get embarrassed. We are all a part of God. I know this. It is not something I have faith in or believe in. I know it. I feel it. Perhaps my purpose is to help people see themselves in me and then get inspired to get up on the throne where they belong. Too many of us are eagles parading as chickens. Halcyon, December 2001. And so it's really interesting to totally forget about writing this and then be reminded that this decision, this walking down this path of seeking attention as a tool of service as a way of trying to be an example or trying to role model or trying to be more brazen and loud and flamboyant to give others permission to do so was not a direct desire or need for attention, but was a conscious decision as a way of answering a calling. And I think that you know, as I look back, and people sometimes will when they joke about, I'll say that I'm kind of shy, and people will go, yeah, right. I mean, when I wrote that, I was dressing crazy compared to how I dress now, like pink fur pants and my hair all crazy and just pink everything. Like I wanted, when I walked into a social event, people to be like, and suddenly everyone being like, oh, wow, I should have dressed crazier. Next time I'm going to dress crazier. And I can see how, you know, the difference between that kind of expression that I was doing, and I still do to a degree, and the expression and the artistic creation of someone who's on stage performing. And I could see how by me blurring that line, it can be challenging. When I go to a concert, when any of us are going to a performance, there are people who are designated as the artists, and we are the audience, and they share from their place of art, and we receive it. And our culture is really kind of established that paradigm, that we have professional artists who deliver us our art, and we taste it and get our fill, and then we go back to our job as consumers. Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert is all about this. And this conscious effort to try to be that artistic expression in everyday life was my mission statement, my manifesto, my attempt to try to take radical self-expression from the Burning Man principles and bring it into the default world. And yes, people can react negatively to it. It does affect the normal, you know, the pattern that we have, the interaction that we have of don't shine too bright. How dare you? Why should you be so bright? The other reaction, the one that I hoped people would have, is like, oh, I could shine brighter. There's no reason that I can't shine any brighter. In fact, if you can dress crazy when you're an attendee at a party, wait. That means we can all be our art. We can all be expressing ourselves and be artistic in all the choices we make at all times. We are always a canvas in this massive expression, this massive art gallery that is the cosmos. And in fact, at this event on Saturday night that we threw for First Saturdays, we had all these people donated their musician, the DJs, and there were dance performers, and there were artists that donated things for our raffle. And I didn't know everybody that chipped in even. It was so awesome. But there was one point, there was a woman who was dressed all cool and tribal, and I wanted to say thank you to the people who were dancing. And I'm like, oh, are you one of the performers tonight? She's like, oh, no. And I was like, yes! Right on. You're just awesome. You're just dressing flamboyantly. You're just being a performer in the role of you in the world. Not because you've been given permission to be on stage, not because you've been given a title of performer, because you are an artist. Even if you're not flamboyant, whatever it is your choice is, it is a conscious choice of how you present yourself to the world. Or it is surrendering that choice to a cultural pattern and allowing that script to define how you're presented, how you act, how you react. So, we had this event, this fundraiser for Saturdays. It started with a talk that I gave about kind of my path to First Saturdays, this note. And it was great because before we started really dancing and having a good time, it was a chance to kind of make sure everybody understood why we were raising money. Often you go to a fundraiser and you know that money's going to charity, but you don't really feel the connection. So a bunch of people all night long were like, man, I love what you guys are doing. I'm so glad that this can be helpful to you guys. We raised over $1,000, which once we remove my Halcyon massage money, that's like still $100 left to give to the homeless. I'm joking. Just kidding. I won't take more than half for massages. But it was, we raised a bunch of money. I had a great time. I think a lot of people had a great time. And it was, honestly, I've never really done anything like this. And thank you so much to Crystal Cat, who offered to do the fundraiser, did all the organizing, and really made it all come together. I've been too afraid to do it. And I was prepared for no one to show up. And we had an awesome crowd of people, raised a bunch of money. But one of the things I talked about in the talk relates to all of this, which is that by following the flow, by being a leaf in the stream, by simply allowing myself to do the next thing that felt right, it led here. Years ago, about the time that I wrote that letter, I was getting a lot of criticism from people that were saying, you know, why don't you do real good in the world? You're spreading digital hugs. Why don't you work at a soup kitchen? Do something that matters. And I was like, it really hurt. And it really felt like I had this philosophy or this belief that if I followed this calling, if I went with the flow, if I worked on my hangups and my personal issues and got clear and then followed the flow, I would be of service to the world in the way that I was supposed to be. And so then to have this 15 years later, First Saturdays isn't technically a soup kitchen, but we're a homeless outreach without meaning to, without doing it from a place of should or guilt. It's done from a place of love and connection and simply doing the thing that felt right. Not only that, but that place of being loudly doing this thing, of asking for attention to do so. Because another thing that happened this last week is somebody posted this weekend a note about, you know, if you help the homeless and take a picture of it, you know, you're not doing it for the right reasons, you're doing it for ego, you know, all the, and there was all these people commenting and replying going, agreeing with that person. And I was like, I'm biased, but I think there's a real value to sharing your good deeds. You know, this woman was saying, I do all this good stuff and I don't tell anybody. And I'm like, how many people could you inspire to doing good deeds if they knew that you were out there doing it too? If they knew this person that they knew was out there and it just, you were demonstrating it. This is how people act in the world. So this last week, in response to First Saturdays, little Ray, 12-year-old Ray, donated all the money that he got for his birthday, which he said, I don't want presents, just give me money because I want to give it to First Saturdays. And he delivered $140 cash to us at the last First Saturdays. 13-year-old Giuseppe, he, after being a super enthusiastic First Saturdays volunteer for months, decided to, because he saw what people needed, he wanted to do a backpack fundraiser or drive, a backpack drive at his school. And so he made a flyer and proposed it to the student body and got it approved. And so he did this back up the homeless backpack drive. And another college woman has become a total regular at First Saturdays. This last time she brought 150 sandwiches in bags with chips and a drink and a note saying, we love you, enjoy your lunch. These children, on their own are following their flow and doing good in the world, being their artists, making the world a better place, not because they should, but because it's who they are. And they didn't do it because of First Saturday. They didn't do it because of me. But First Saturdays and what we're doing helped. So to see that 15 years ago I said, I feel like I should do this. And then
forget about it and read it and go, whoa, that's kind of the path that I've... It's kind of the path that I've been on, and it's kind of... There's a lot of times that I feel like I should do more. There's a lot of times when I feel like I don't know why I'm still insecure, and I don't know why I'm still anxious, and I don't know why I'm still not far enough along. And I mentioned this to someone at the workshop who came up to me as I was leaving and said, "You look like a magical being." And they were... And I said, I still, you know, I still need help. I still need... And they said, "Oh, you mean you're having a human experience?" And I was like, "Yeah." So... thank you for letting me share this journey. Somehow I'm still midway on the path after this year after years of doing this. And I'm so grateful to share this journey with you. I love you. Happy Hug Nation. Let's have a hug. Wherever you are, and in a moment I'll ask you to type in your physical address so we can visualize everybody. But wherever you are, let's let go of where our feet are grounded, where our physical body is, and just tune into our vibration. If you are connecting with my vibration, if you are feeling connected with those in the chat room live and those who are going to tune in later in the archive, if you're here on the archive, those who are here before and will be after, that vibration of being midway on the journey, of being open to love and loving more and being connected and seeking and working to be our highest, best selves. And grab yourself by the shoulders, and as you grabbing not your physical form, but a symbolic representation of all these individuals, and as we squeeze, being squeezed by all those other people, and in that embrace, in this symbolic hug, let the me dissolve into the we, feeling a part of the one, each of us a cell in a massive cosmic organism. Visualize the planet and all the beings all around the planet as cells, becoming clear, not individuals, but simply pieces of the whole. And so let's take three breaths together in this oneness, in through the nose and out through the mouth. Inhale. Last one. On behalf of Grandpa Caleb, Ray, Giuseppe, all the love warriors, happy Hug Nation. I love you. I got something in my eye. Did you see that? Ooh, wow. Got a little emotional this morning. hard to just kind of like keep going from there. Christina asking, from your experience with writing your memoir, how difficult is it sharing your life's most difficult and vulnerable moments with the rest of the world, knowing you'll be criticized? I want to write my own memoir, but nervous about being judged. How do you push through barriers and not be held back? Well, that's a great question. It's a complicated question. Or not complicated. There's multiple parts to it. One is that I am writing
my memoirs right now. And every time I say that out loud, I just feel like such a douche. Like, unless you're 90 years old and retired, I think maybe the word memoirs feels a little pretentious. But that being said, I am writing without thought of them being published. I'm writing and writing the details and the stories and the memories with giving myself permission to not publish them. Because otherwise I get caught up and I go, wait a minute, what if my dad read that? Or wait, if that was public, I would never be able to work or speak at a school ever again. And so I'm making the writing and the book two separate things. And so something, what I'm doing is I'm visualizing the book that I'm writing is simply, I keep visualizing there's a plot point in the Sons of Anarchy TV show where the main character finds an old manuscript that his dad wrote. His dad's passed on. And it's kind of this typewritten single copy of this, his life story and all of his thoughts. And so I think of like, that's what I'm writing. And maybe I lock it in a chest somewhere and I hide a key and I leave a map and I, you know, tell someone to give this to my nephew on their 30th birthday or something like that. And so that relieves me of that editing process while the flow is happening. And I'm working with Jesse Gross, who's my coach and helping me to encourage me through those times and just let the process of writing happen without that attachment to judgment. So that's how I'm really, there's a lot, I mean, the stories that I'm writing is not what I set out to write. I set out to write a collection of the wisdom of Hugnation, and what I've been doing is writing down the adventures of the last 20 years. And a lot of those adventures are not family friendly. I guess it depends on who your family is. But so the other part of it, and this has been a process that's happened to me over years and years and years, maybe just years and years. I'm not that old, but I have been sharing Hugnation is 15 years old, and I was sharing stories online longer before that, and I learned before that the power of vulnerability. We did an exercise at this thing I went to on Sunday night where we were asked to share something that we're afraid of somebody knowing about us to a stranger. And a lot of people, it was this very scary experience. And then once they shared it, they realized it wasn't so hard and it actually felt good to, you know, reveal this. And I was like, this is not my problem. Like, I quickly enjoy sharing vulnerability because it makes me feel connected. It makes me feel free. I actually struggle when I'm trying to maintain the feeling of being perfect and not flawed. That's when I get freaked out. When I'm afraid, like, oh, what if, like, as long as I'm trying to maintain the facade of having it all together and being this pillar in the community and this elder and like, oh, then I'm constantly feeling like I'm gonna fail and let them down. But if I go, that's when I feel comfortable. And so I have learned over the years that that process of being vulnerable is, despite the fear that it's going to make you feel weak, is the opposite happens. When you lay out your insecurities and your fears and name them and own them, they no longer can be ammunition against you. I remember when I was young being deathly afraid of anyone realizing that I was wearing foundation makeup to cover my blotches from me picking up my face. I haven't written about this yet. But, and I was so afraid, and I wore fake tanner in the early days of fake tanner when it was pretty darn orange. So, and I lived in fear of somebody noticing that. Because as a junior high and high school boy, using fake tanner and foundation makeup would have been horrifying. This is a time in American history, or at least in my life, when
being called a faggot was like the worst thing that could happen to you. And so I was totally afraid. And it was also a time when I was insecure about my big ears and my skinny neck. So I was wearing like a turtleneck every day when it was warm. And like suddenly I would come home from school and I would see like makeup on the, my turtleneck. And I'm like, did anybody see that? And then one time somebody said, your skin looks kind of orange. And I'd been practicing, thanks to the help of my friend Scott. And I said, oh, it's because I wear fake tanning lotion and it kind of has an orange tint to it. And they were like, oh, okay. Like once I put it out there, it was no longer a rock you could throw at me. It was a rock that was part of the foundation of who I am. Yeah, it's not awesome, but it's real. And if you want to judge me from that place, you're a jerk. You haven't discovered something. You haven't, I found out who you really are. Like, no, I told you who I really am. You're now a jerk if you take advantage of that. And if you judge someone based on their truth, it has everything to do with you. If you judge me based on what I'm trying to present myself as, if I'm trying to pretend like I've got it all together and I've got perfect skin, and you go, you don't have perfect skin, then it's, I failed. But if I go, oh, I don't have perfect skin, and you go, you're lame for not having perfect skin, it's like, that's like, I mean, would you tease someone who has muscular dystrophy? Would you tease someone for being short? Would you make fun of a flower because you don't like the color? Would you not appreciate a cloud because the shape is wrong? No, those are the things, that's how those things are made. That's how the creator created those things. You don't like them as they are truthfully? Take it up with the boss. And so I find that to be a very liberating thing. And it actually has been the impetus for so much of my my path and my sharing and my oversharing as a tool towards liberation. So yes, it can seem scary. But one, you don't have to share anything. Getting it out is a different process than sharing it. And two, as you share, you become invincible. That is the metaphor of Christ accepting the whips, not fighting back. You think Jesus couldn't have fought back if he wanted to? No, he took it. And in doing so, resurrected, became even more powerful. It's the story of Aslan in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which is the story of Jesus. But, you know, when there was this ancient magic that they shaved his head and humiliated him. I don't know if you remember your Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But he came back more powerful. It is the same with us. When we are not afraid, and we don't try to hide our truth, we are anchored, connected to the one, to the divine, to our power, and you can't be hurt. So good luck with your journey into self-expression, and if you choose to, sharing it. I would love to read anything that you want to share that's a little scary. Because that's the good stuff. Seriously. If you had, I mean, in the epic myth that is your life, would you want to look back and be like, oh, cool, my life was like this bubblegum, no real fear, no scary stuff, like really even keel, pina coladas on the beach, that was my life. You'd be like, that's a lame story. Who would read that? You want to be like, oh, I battled a dragon, and then I had all this doubt, and then I met the wizard, and then, you know, Luke Skywalker, you know, all that stuff. Hero's journey. That's the good stuff. So good luck on your journey, and thanks for being a part of mine.